On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR, Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio. I'm Sue Bartholomew. This is On the Commons, and The Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions, and I'm thrilled and delighted to have an old friend back on the show with me, Senator Mike Schneider from Nevada. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Sue.
You have been a very busy person. Every time I call Mike, I call him on his cell phone, and he says, "Hold on a second, I'm on the floor."
You got us working, so you can tell all your listeners that legislators really do work.
Well, I know you do, because every time I do call you, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about it, because you're either in meetings, and the other day I thought I'd call you and get you before you started working. You said, no, we started at 7 a.m.
That's right. That's when our committee starts here, our Commerce Committee. Starts early, every morning, 5 days a week.
5 days? You're kidding.
No.
Are you a full-time legislator, Mike?
No, we're a part-time in Nevada. But when we are in session, we work real hard. And I'll tell you, Nevada is the fastest growing state in the nation. And we're going to have to do something else, I think, Sue, because the issues are, there are more issues than there used to be, and they're getting more complicated and complex. And, life is getting more complex, as you know. And so we have to spend more time at it. And used to be kind of fun. Now it's not so fun anymore.
You're not having as much fun anymore, huh?
No, it's all work and no play now.
How long is your session, Mike? Is it an annual session?
No, it's semi-annual, and that's one of the problems.
By semi-annual, you mean every 6 months?
Well,
or every 2 years, biannual.
Biannual is what I meant.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay.
So we go every other year. And we go for approximately 120 days. We have interim committees that we do, during the interim, during the off year, we study issues. But, when you have a part-time legislature, it's hard to get them all together.
Sometimes I'm really glad that we have a part-time legislator. I can't imagine the mess we'd be in if they had a chance to go at this full-time. Now, you're one of the good guys, Mike.
Out here in the West, that is the attitude out here in the West. If you keep the legislators at home, then nothing bad can happen. But we do have some business out here, especially when we're growing so fast, and we've outstripped actually our labor force out here and our tax base.
Wow.
So we have some problems.
Well, one of the big problems that I think we all have and we all share is private governments, also known as homeowners associations, and that's something you're dealing with. And over the years, you have been consistently proposing legislation designed basically to protect the individuals, right?
Correct. Uh-huh. And, we in Nevada here, we recognize this as a government and a quasi-government. And so our laws are structured in a way where, I believe that we allow the people an opportunity to, unelect board members. And we've set up a couple sessions ago where with 10% of the signatures of all the homeowners in an association, you can call a special meeting with the purpose of having a ballot to unelect board members. So that's quite a bit of control we've given the homeowners here, and I think it's very positive.
Well, we just talked about a story here in the first hour, because that's a different show that I do. And we talked about an article where the board members decided to oust a board member because he was out there trying to get the covenants changed to allow for, you know, support our troops signs to be placed in yards. And basically the board didn't like it, although he had talked to 47 homeowners and 45 of them had signed his petition. The board decided, we don't like this guy, we'll vote to oust him and get rid of him. There's a lot of work left to be done, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
You have actually a couple of your bills that you've got going right now in Nevada have to do with reducing SB 100. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, SB 100 is our homeowner association bill, and it's our big omnibus bill. And what we're doing here is we're going to create a commission, a homeowner association commission. So any complaints or disputes would be funneled through the ombudsman's office, which we've created here, and then go before the commission. And the commission would have tremendous power and authority. The commission could actually remove board members, discipline board members, and, you know, they could actually even put a whole homeowner association into receivership under outside management to be run, so that until a board could get or a homeowner association could get on stable feet. You know, I know that in other areas of the country, CAI is looked at with kind of dim eyes over it.
Oh, very here, dim.
Pardon?
Very dim.
Right. And here the same thing happens, but we've had a lot of the association management companies have actually left CAI here, and they are supporting this legislation that I have. And over the years, they've stepped forward. A lot of the companies have stepped forward, admitted to the problems after they fought me at first, and now they've seen that a lot of the law we've written here works, helps homeowner association, helps the people, and actually helps them, makes their job easier. And so they're supporting a lot of what we're doing, and they support this commission, which will have tremendous power, and it could even, the commission would have the authority to have the real estate division remove the license of a homeowner association manager. Here in Nevada, a couple sessions ago, we had managers all become licensed. They have to be licensed by the state.
There's been a lot of discussion about licensing managers, and the conclusion that many people come to is that, you know, the only benefit to licensing is pouring money into the state coffer, because it's the state that licenses them, right?
Yes, it is.
How are you going to fund this? But wait a minute. Before we get into that, let's talk about this. Nevada was the first state, basically, that had an ombudsman with Mary Lynn Ashworth, right?
Correct.
And the homeowners loved her because she did, you know, she did take their side. Then she was fired, and you had Eldon Hardy. But from what I've been reading, Eldon hasn't seemed to have worked out quite that well either, has he?
Well, yeah, Eldon had a big learning curve, and he didn't know anything about homeowner associations, and he came from the business side. He was a business owner, and then he was a professional mediator. And, may not have been my first selection, but regardless, he's got in, and he's doing a pretty fair job now. It's taking a while to get his feet underneath him and learn homeowner associations. When you create something new and a new position in the state and you're dealing with homeowner associations, and I think what the real estate division tried to do in hiring Eldon was hire somebody that had absolutely no connection with CAI or the old guard industry out there. And, I had some good points and some bad points. So good points, You know, he didn't know any of those people. And the bad point is he didn't know much about homeowner associations either. But he's learning, and it's coming along pretty good now.
But I've got an article here from the Review Journal, and I'm trying to find here where it says he's somebody's nephew. He's somebody. Heidi, however, said his office is making great progress. The ombudsman is the uncle of Senator Warren Hardy, a member. So there is sort of a familial relationship.
Right.
Is that a political appointment, basically?
Well, I would probably suspect that, but Warren Hardy just got elected to office this year.
Okay, so he wasn't there when
Elton Hardy. He wasn't.
What is Eldon Hardy's abilities? What is his job description? What can he do?
Well, his job description is he's supposed to work with the homeowners and help them, solve their problem. As an ombudsman, he's tries to be a neutral third party to get between the homeowners and their association, their board, and. He does have the power to subpoena records. He has to get approval of that from the one member of the Real Estate Commission, and he can subpoena records of an association. And, he doesn't like to do that, but he has that power. And what we've decided here in Nevada, after dealing with the Ombudsman's Office for a while, is come up with this commission and give this commission a lot of power. And then the ombudsman would work with people, getting them before the commission, trying to resolve disputes before they go to the commission. And so what we've heard here is, well, the ombudsman has no teeth. And that's the thing we've heard for several years. And so we're going to address that. And we still would like the ombudsman to be kind of a neutral third party to help people with their problems, but if their problems cannot be resolved, then it's on to the commission where you're going to get a decision, and the hammer will fall hard. And
Who's going to be on this commission, Mike?
Well, the commission will have seven members on this commission. They'll be appointed by the governor, and it will be, we'll have like three members of the industry, a manager, an accountant, something like that. Three people that are very familiar with homeowner association management. And then you'll have four homeowners.
And who are the homeowners going to be? Board members? Are they going to be board members?
Well, no, they don't have to be board members. No. And as a matter of fact, I think we've put in there that, one has to be a board member, but the others can just be homeowners. So, so we're trying to get representation from all sides, and we want people to know a little bit, and we've put in there where there'll be money to help educate the people also. And we raise the money to run the ombudsman's office and now to raise this commission. We charge $3 a unit per year. So if you live in a homeowner association, it costs you $3 a year to pay into the state fund for the ombudsman and now the commission. So if you don't live in a homeowner association, you don't pay the fee and you aren't taxed. And so far it's working good. We have a surplus of money. And we have enough money to start this commission to really kick it off good. We'll have about $1.8 million in reserves.
Wow.
By July. So that's when the commission will start to kick off.
Now the commission is going to be paid?
They're an unpaid commission, but what happens is they'll get a per diem, for their expenses and all that. And I think it's like $80 a day per diem for expenses and travel. And then, of course, you have to have staff for the commission. So you have to have a secretary. A member of the attorney general's firm will be there, so the attorney for the commission will be the attorney general. So, you know, you'll have the legal expertise there, and you'll have to have recorders there to record the testimony. This will be run very similar to our gaming commission we have out here that runs the gaming industry in Nevada. And it'll have power just like the gaming control board.
So finally you're actually going to have some adult supervision.
Yes.
And
well,
yeah.
We hope to.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. I mean, we have an ombudsman in Virginia. I think it's a woman. I haven't tried to contact her or him, but whenever I get calls from people in Virginia, my first question is, have you contacted the ombudsman? And the answer usually is yes, and she's useless. I testified against having an ombudsman, and I was followed by CAI, who testified for having an ombudsman. My testimony included cartoons, Mike.
Cartoons?
Uh-huh. I found a cartoon that, a non sequitur cartoon, and you had this image of a guy walking who had obviously been walking through the desert for miles and miles and miles, and he was carrying an empty gas can, and he gets to this little information booth in an oasis, and the woman in the information booth says, "I'm sorry, I'm not authorized to help you. All I'm authorized to do is tell you you're screwed." And they say, and basically, because the ombudsman's sole responsibility is to say, "Oh, yeah, well, you know, you need to hire an attorney and take this, it's a civil matter, and take it to court." I mean, I couldn't see the sense in having, you know, spending a lot of money for something like that. So I said, basically, the only job the ombudsman would be able to do is tell people, "Hey, you're screwed." And so the cartoon fit in beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem out here with the ombudsman's office is kind of the same thing what you have described there. Now, the ombudsman would help the people here get to alternative dispute resolution, which is what we set up also, where you can go to mediation or arbitration. But a lot of problems that homeowners have with their boards and everything else, a lot of the problems can be resolved with the ombudsman if they can get there soon enough, all right, before everybody digs their heels in too hard. You know, they can get help with the ombudsman, but if it's gone too long and people dug those heels in and feelings have been hurt on both sides, then there's the ombudsman is just pretty much ineffective. Then is what we found, and that's why we're coming with the commission. And because like I said, as the ombudsman goes, I mean, he didn't have a lot of power. And we move very slowly on that. We were very careful here in Nevada not to give police-type powers to just anyone. And but we've seen the results, and we need more authority. And the legislature, on the Senate side, anyhow, where I am, we've come to the realization that, hey, you know, we need somebody with a big hammer that can come down hard on renegade managers, renegade board members, and actually even some renegade homeowners, because not all the board members are bad, and you do have some bad homeowners out there. So,
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Right.
Going back to this commission, presumably this is going to be sort of like a hearing?
Correct. Uh-huh.
And are all seven members going to be on each hearing panel at any given time, or is it
correct?
Just...
They should all seven be there.
So you're going to have a balance?
Correct. Uh-huh. You will have a balance. And the balance sways, swings more toward the homeowner, of course. So... you know, and not towards managers or industry.
Yeah, but you know,
that's what we're looking for.
You've got the board member, And I'm not saying that all board members are bad, but and I'm not. I mean, because I think they've been put in an impossible situation. And
well, here how it's going to go, Shu, is the governor will appoint these people. They will serve on this board at the sole discretion of the governor.
Where is the governor going to get a hold of these people? Are they going to be recommendations from certain groups of people?
Oh, I'm sure the CAI will probably recommend people.
There's no question about that one, Mike.
You know that'll be coming. But also, you know, I know that the realtors, the Nevada Association of Realtors, will probably be recommending some people. And or a person, which I think is very good. And then there are other homeowners. I've had several homeowners. I mean, I've had dozens of homeowners call me in and say they would like to apply with the governor. And I think that's just very healthy. Just homeowners, not board members. I've had a couple board members call me that are actually one. I had called last week and she is having a fight with her other board members, and they're trying to get rid of her. You know, kind of the same situation you had earlier. So there's going to be plenty of people applying, that's for sure. And, you know, so the governor and his staff are going to have to shuffle through these names and check the people out. But like I say, these people serve at the sole discretion of the governor. So if they look like they're you know, being too biased one way or the other, creating problems on the commission, the governor can remove them at any time for any reason, which, you know, that's, you get a board member that gets removed for favoring, like, CAI position or something like that all the time, you know, that'll send a big message. And this governor understands homeowners associations and understands the problems. So he will be... you know, he'll be watching this commission right away, you know.
But, Mike, if I elected or I voted for, as a homeowner, and I voted for a board member to represent my interests on the board, and the person I felt best represented my interests and my position, why would the government be removing them? Shouldn't the homeowners who elected them, who will be represented by these people, be the ones to actually do the removing?
Yes, and we have that in place.
No, I bet you've thought of everything, Mike. You're
okay.
Pretty good.
we have that in place where they can do it, but sometimes, it is hard to get together all the owners for a vote. And maybe we're a little more unique out here in the West than in Virginia, but here in the West and the Sun Belt, Las Vegas in particular, and the Lake Tahoe area, we have a lot of townhomes and condos and even single-family houses in homeowners associations, and the people are snowbirds, and they only live here part-time. And so that throws a different complexion on everything also. So it can be harder to get votes and all that when you have people that live maybe in Las Vegas from November to April, and then they're going to go back to Minneapolis or something like that. So, you know, it's a little different situation here.
Yeah, I know that the snowbirds, it is a lot harder, and you have the same situation in Florida, for instance, in Arizona,
right,
where I used to live, and all of these the winter resort snowbird areas, and that's one of the problems that was faced by George Andrus when he was trying to get the covenants changed to allow his flagpole to stay. There was nobody there. They were all up in the summering in the north and wintering down south, but unfortunately they went after him.
Right. So this commission will help alleviate some of those problems, and then the commission can actually will have the the power and the authority to dig into records more. I mean, you know, if a homeowner wants to subpoena records and look at the records and financial statements of an association, he can do it. But you know that just a homeowner may not have the expertise to look at an audit or to do an audit, and may not know what they're looking at. Well, the commission will have people there that could do that. So if there's anything funny happening with the books, you know, the commission will have the authority to dig into that, look at it, and then take action. Also, a lot of times homeowners, I mean, I had a homeowner call me yesterday when I was up in Carson City, a homeowner from Las Vegas, you know, the manager of the association, who is also on the board, which to me is a real horrendous conflict, was just lying to her about the CCNRs. And the CCNRs say certain things.
Yeah.
Well, state law overrides. Our state law out here is NRS 116 that governs homeowners associations, and that overrides CCNRs. And I told the lady, I said, under state law, you know, this is what you can do. And she said, but our CCNRs say this. And I said, it doesn't matter what your CCNRs say. We have state law that addresses that, and it supersedes that. It supersedes city and county law, and especially your homeowner association. So, you know, you get things like that where board members and managers may be absolutely just to cover things up. They lie to homeowners. And so, you know, you go before the commission, and all this is going to be brought out instantly. And that's when people can lose their position as a manager or a board member.
Your law, as you say, supersedes the governing documents?
Absolutely, it does. State law supersedes it.
Just across the board, every provision in NRS 116 supersedes everything in the governing documents.
Correct.
How can we then call this? It's no longer a contractual agreement, then, is it?
Well, it is. I mean, you know,
no, because if the law supersedes it, then there's no
right.
contract.
Now, you know, the law doesn't address every specific thing. Let's say it doesn't address that you can have grass instead of rock in your front yard. I mean, we don't go into that little detail. Or your houses can be painted red instead of beige. We don't go into that sort of detail. But we go into detail about open meetings and how to recall board members and things like that. So if the state addresses anything that's in your CCNRs, addresses it directly, even though your CCNRs may say something different, if the state has addressed it, the state always supersedes it.
So I would assume then that you would have state action written all over everything that happens in Nevada. Because you're superseding the covenants. It's no longer a contractual agreement, strictly speaking.
Well, yeah, and we have some old CCNRs in this state. You know, if you get into CCNRs that are 30, 35 years old, you'll have some that, you know, are a few pages and they don't even make sense anymore. And you'll have an association that doesn't have a lot of money and they can't afford to hire an attorney to, redo their CCNRs. What we've said is that state law is then assumed to be your CCNRs.
See, I live in one of those associations. It's somewhere between 34 years old, someplace around that neighborhood. And my CCNRs are all of 6 pages long. And basically, you know, if you look at that, I mean, my contract, if you want to call it a contract, gives the association very limited powers. And the bulk of the power is with the homeowners because they did not agree to give that stuff up. It's not part of the contract. The newer ones are 250, 500 pages long, and they regulate everything. I mean, they can go onto private property. They can't on mine. You know, it's sort of, I would just as soon go back to the old, you know, to mine. If I have to live under them, mine's, I guess, a better one to live under, because I still maintain a certain amount of ownership. But we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away, because Mike will be back, and there's going to be much more Mike and much more on the commons on the other side of this song. And you'll recognize this song.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today is our old friend, Senator Mike Schneider from Nevada, probably one of the hardest working legislators out there. He's always either on the floor or in committee meetings. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Sue.
We've been talking about some of the bills that you've been sort of pushing through this year, and one of your bills is SB Senate Bill 100. And we talked about the commission, and we talked about the big hammer and trying to provide some adult supervision for in homeowners associations. But that's not all your bill has to do with, does it?
No, it. You know, we cover fines in our bill, and of course, as you know, several years ago here in Nevada, I outlawed foreclosures on fines, and we've kept fining out here in Nevada. Because people were getting fined tens of thousands of dollars, it was just out of hand, just totally ridiculous. So we've kept fines. We've outlawed foreclosure on fines, and now with regular foreclosure for not paying your dues, what we are initiating is that every foreclosure before it's just very hard to deal with the grief you get from CAI and some other people about on this foreclosure issue. But on your monthly assessments, if you don't pay those, we've gone to a situation where the ombudsman has to touch every one of those foreclosures and has to approve the foreclosures, so that
the ombudsman gets to approve the foreclosures.
Yes, he has to. Well, gets to approve it. I guess that's a different word. He has to disapprove of the foreclosure. In other words, he has to look at it. He has to contact the people and to see what the situation is.
What, a face-to-face contact?
Either face-to-face or on the phone. He has to contact them in some way, but personally contact them, just not through a letter.
Okay.
Right. He has to talk with them. And the reason for that is we found out that a lot of people will get in a beef with their board, and so they'll say, I'm not paying my dues until you correct this situation. Then the board will go ahead and foreclose on them. Well, that shouldn't happen. You know, so we are intervening on that. And then also, we have people, a lot of seniors. We're the fastest growing senior community in the nation, here in southern Nevada, in the Las Vegas area. And we have these big Sun City projects built here. And so the seniors that move in are on the backside of the life cycle. And some of them are, you know, they get a little senile. They forget to pay their dues or whatever. And we, you know, and many of them have homes that are free and clear. So we don't want them to lose their property because they forgot to pay their dues. And then also we have a lot of the snowbirds, and maybe they go home for the summer, and let's just say one of the spouses dies, and that was the one that paid the bills, and the other one isn't paying the bills. We don't want anyone to lose their property because of that, because of just simple mistakes or family situations. I mean, we've had people with cancer that a few years ago we had a couple of families with cancer, older people, and they had their finances wiped out by cancer and all that. And we actually at that point in time we stepped in and saved their properties. I received checks from people around town. We bailed their properties out and kept them in their homes. So what we've done is we're saying, you can't foreclose. Now, if you're just being a deadbeat and you refuse to pay your dues, okay, we've said, all right, then you're going to be subject to foreclosure. But in many cases, there are circumstances where people, just things happen, and they shouldn't be penalized so hard. So we're making an effort to step in there and correct those problems.
Mike, have you run into situations where the board refuses to accept a check?
Oh, we have, absolutely. And, another thing they'll do is they have a fine against someone. They'll take their dues payment and apply that towards the fine.
Right.
And they say, now you haven't paid your dues, so we're foreclosing. And, they just get to be, jerks.
Well,
we're putting a stop to that.
Did you say jerks?
I said jerks.
Oh, good. Well, you're being very polite. Yeah, I get calls from a lot of people from around the country, Mike, and they're absolutely desperate. They're in tears because they send in checks. The checks are returned. They send in checks. The manager or treasurer or whoever happens to sit on the check for 10 days, 2 weeks, and doesn't deposit it until past the due date. And then starts tacking on late fees and interest things. But what gets me is they send the checks back. What right do they have to do that? I mean, if you're paying your pro rata share to the association.
Right. Well,
and isn't that what they get?
Part of our foreclosure thing, and then also the commission will be able to get involved in those. Once the ombudsman sees things like that happen in the foreclosure, then the commission can step in and really
take
some heavy-handed action with them.
Can you sort of include that in the law, saying that they have to accept all payments?
Well, no, we haven't included that in. But we've, with this commission, with the more authority we've given the ombudsman, I think that'll all be taken care of.
Because I contacted the Fair Trade Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they have the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act under their auspices, and I looked through the act, and I couldn't see anywhere where it said you had to accept a payment. So I called them up and said, do associations have to accept a payment? And to me, it's just outrageous that they're allowed to refuse a check.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess what I could argue on the other side is, do we have to accept the payment? What if it's only a partial payment?
After the other half of the payment.
Right, I know.
And instead of,
we try to, what we're trying to do is put that down to a more local level instead of dictating totally everything from the state. That's why we have the commission and the ombudsman. We're trying to put it down there and give them the authority to look at all this stuff and make judgment calls then. But I can tell you, Shu, we had in the foreclosure companies this session already, and we've had them at the table and pounded on them real hard. We've put so much heat on them, a couple of the foreclosure companies have actually closed their doors.
Yay!
Because we've come down and put heat on them, and because they've been working with, and I'll tell you what, not only have they been working with some of the CAI attorneys, they've been partially owned.
I was going to say.
So we've come down hard, and that's why we suspect that some of the foreclosures have been purchased by some of the CAI attorneys. through their foreclosure companies. So we're, you know, as soon as you put your finger in one hole in the dike, they find another one. And, but we're closing them as fast as, all the loopholes as fast as we can find them.
And so, they keep springing up with new ones all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, and this is the one thing, Mike, because you've got someone who's been sending in their checks regularly. They're not late. They've never been late. They're not, you know, habitual delinquents. They're not the scum of the earth. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, maybe they asked to look at the financial records. But, you know, all of a sudden, they're being targeted. And the frustration, because they'll call me up, and the absolute frustration of knowing that their check was there on time but wasn't deposited until afterwards. And, of course, once they start adding late fees, you don't necessarily know it. And as you said, the next check comes in, the check gets applied to late fees, fines, interest payments, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're actually delinquent.
Right. And I've you know, I've had those same type calls. I've had calls where people had their checks cashed, and then the management company says, "We've never received your check."
Yeah.
So their paperwork has been so screwed up that, you know, well, again, the commission's going to take care of all those problems.
I hope so, and I'd be very interested to do a follow-up on the commission. When do you anticipate having it in place?
Well, that'll be in place, you know, if we can get this bill through the assembly now, that will be in place at the end of the year. So,
okay.
The governor will, in October, he'll appoint the commission.
Okay.
And so then they'll have 3 months to get up and operating. So.
We'll do a follow-up on that, Mike. We'll find out how they're working,
okay,
how it's working out. Fines, you say you capped fines.
Yes, we've capped fines. We capped them three sessions ago, and we've upped the fines a little bit. And it's hard. I'll tell you what's really hard. When you start looking at the fining, that is a tricky situation. I hate fines altogether, but what we've, you know, it's hard to make a fine equal in all associations, because we have, you know, $75,000 condo project, and if you find somebody in a $75,000 unit out here, $50, that's a lot of money. And that was our original cap on fines. But then if you go to another association where you have multi-million dollar homes sitting on a TPC golf course, you know, $50 fine for those people, they'll leave, they'll let their violation go, and they'll pay their $50 because that's cheap, you know, and they'll never correct the problem. So, and even if you have a $1,000 fine, you know, and we aren't there yet, but even if you have a $1,000 fine, I mean, somebody in a multi-million dollar home, that's no money to them.
Okay, Mike, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time, because I know you want to talk about something about construction defects here and what you're doing in that, and we're going to run out of time. But all I wanted to say very quickly is that two states have found fining to be unconstitutional. And why not let the courts decide whether, A, there really is a problem, because 9 times out of 10 associations exceed the scope of their authority and start fining people for things that they don't have the right to fine people for. And number two, let a judge decide. You live in a $75,000 house. You sneezed at the wrong time. You know, your fine is 10 cents if the judge decides that the fine is warranted. You live in a multi-million dollar house, hey, we're going to take away your firstborn.
Right, right. Well, that's true. And again, we're looking for the commission to step in and do some of this. But we're going to do an interim study also on homeowner associations and delegate voting and master associations and sub-associations. And all this gets pretty complicated, so we're going to be doing an interim study on that.
Okay.
And working with the commission on this interim study. So, you know, I think we're the state that right now is probably leading the nation in this stuff. We're going to get right down to the nuts and bolts of everything. And I think it's a good thing.
Well, I think it's about time. I mean, my personal opinion is it's not working and we might as well just stop building them, but we won't go there. Construction defects, Mike, if you want to get that in, we're going to have to get to that now. You've also
yes.
got some legislation about that.
Yeah, I have, and you know, I've got a couple bills out of committee here this past week on construction defect, and they'll be moved to the assembly now next week, one of them is, first of all, let me tell you what's happening on construction defects. We're in a very fast-growing market here, and the construction defect attorney, this special species of trial lawyers, have come in and they're preying on homeowners associations. It is absolute preying on them. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some construction defects, because there are. I think every home, you can find a defect in every home built. There's something isn't right, because it's built by human beings, all right? But those probably aren't all defects. And what we found here is these attorneys are making tens of millions of dollars on these construction defect cases. And even associations that have, I mean, legitimate defects, after the attorneys are finished with their court cases, which will take 5 years, they leave with half the money.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's no money left, not enough money left to fix all the problems. And
so the homeowners are basically left holding the bag still.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then we have some evidence out here in Nevada that when the attorneys, what they want to do is make a presentation to homeowners and scare them to death that their houses are going to fall down and kill them, you know. They send in their experts, which I kindly refer to as their hired liars. They're hired liars.
Okay.
And we have some evidence that they may be planting defects and actually rigging defects to take, and then they take photos of them and show the homeowners and scare the homeowners half to death, so they start these construction defect lawsuits. And they lock the builders off the project so that they cannot get back in and repair anything. And they won't allow builders to come and look when they're inspecting houses. So one bill I've done, Senate Bill 273, would give the builders the opportunity to attend any time a professional inspection took place on the property. So I passed that out yesterday out of committee. And I just think that's just good consumer protection. Having a builder or his representative there when these guys are looking for defects or at the defects, you know. And then I passed another one out, Senate Bill 371, which, again, I'm establishing a commission where all construction defect claims would go through the commission process, and you wouldn't go to court anymore. And why I'm saying is you don't go to court because it isn't left up to a jury. Because what happens is these trial lawyers come in with their hired liars and they say, it's $25 million to fix this construction defect, all these construction defects. The builders say, it's only $500,000. So they spend several years in court taking testimony and depositions and all this stuff, and they spend over $1 million on each side trying to defend their position, and then somewhere a jury is going to decide how much money you get. And it probably isn't enough to fix the defects if there really are defects. And so under my proposal, you come in and you have defect. If you have problems with your houses or your condos, you go to the commission. The commission sends out its expert, state-approved person. They go out and say what the problem is, and it's fixed. There is no argument about the price or anything. The homeowner gets their houses fixed. And I think that's the way we have to go.
Mike, there was a time when you had state and local inspectors who were on the building site when these buildings were being constructed, mm-hmm. and they made sure that things were built properly. You know, now you're hearing about stories where, you know, nails just don't even go, you know, they just go through a piece of wood. There's nothing anchoring them anywhere. And things that leak like sieves. And so you want to make, I mean, I would assume that you really want to make sure that these expensive houses, because regardless of which end of the spectrum they are, as you said, you know, when you live in a $75,000 condo, $50 is a lot of money to you, but even those people need the protections, yet they're being given.
Absolutely.
In some cases.
Yes, and part of what we're doing in our legislation is we're requiring, you know, when a builder gets a license in this state, and I think it's most states, they have that license for life, and they are not required to go back for any further training. Well, we're changing that here in Nevada, where they have to have continuing education and upgrade themselves in the construction industry. So that's part of what we're doing.
Well, what about the subcontractors? Because the builder's going to...
That's the same thing. Everyone in the building industry. Subs as well as generals.
So carpenters and masons and electricians and plumbers and all of these guys are
right. Everyone. And they all have to go back for continuing education. And we're even having in there where the inspectors have to go back for more education. And so we're covering the whole industry. And then let me tell you, on my construction defect commission, the money to fund that will come from contractors. So when they renew their license, they have to pay a fee. And it's we have like three different levels right now of contractors, and they have to pay a fee to that level, and that goes to fund this commission.
And then it gets tacked onto the cost of the house.
Pardon?
And then it gets tacked on to the cost of the house.
Well, you know it will.
Yeah.
It will. But
so it goes back to the consumer.
The consumers have to pay no matter what.
Yeah, ultimately.
Okay. I mean, somebody has to pay something. I just, you know, so it's going to, you know, you're going to pay a little more on the price of a new house, probably. But
you know,
it isn't that much money, Shu. For a big builder, it would be like $1,000. I mean, we've got thousands of builders in this state.
Yeah.
So a big builder, you know, somebody's building 1,000 homes this year in Las Vegas, for instance, he'll pay like $1,000. Well, that's $1 a house.
That's $1 a house.
That's nothing.
But also, I mean, I guess it would be offset by the money he'd be saving if he were being sued. So
absolutely, because some of these guys are getting just hammered, and then their defense lawyers are making $1 million and all this.
A million? They're making more than that. They're making multi-million dollars on each of these cases.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have an attorney here in this town, in Las Vegas, that just in the last few years has made over $50 million net into his pocket.
Yeah. There was, and unfortunately, I was not able to break the story because the people involved did not want to go public with it, which is really silly, but I heard from a small Midwestern state, and I heard from a number of different people. These were the low-end homes, you know, where people, retirees on a fixed income, just barely squeaking by, and also the very upscale multi-million dollar homes where people had a lot of money. And it was one attorney who, with his sidekick, would go on there and inspect the properties, and he'd say, oops, there's a crack in the sidewalk. The homeowners themselves are saying, there is no problem here. I mean, this is not a construction defect.
That's right, and we have that happening all over Nevada right now. And, you know, it's a crime what's happening, but we're going to try to crack down. But I'll tell you how fast and loose these guys operate. They're all over this state, suing everything that's less than 10 years old. They're suing, and they've infiltrated CAI. The next president of CAI in Las Vegas is a construction defect attorney. I mean, this is as sleazy as you can get, and they are shaking down every property manager out there, every board. I think it's insurance fraud. I think we're really having a problem, and I am personally upset with the Nevada Bar that they are not stepping in and investigating this.
Oh, the Bar Association seemed to be useless.
I've lost all confidence in the Nevada Bar, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Would you believe the hour's up?
It went quick, Shu.
It sure did. I hope you'll come back.
You bet. Give me a call anytime.
Anytime. I'll try not to get you when you're on the floor again. But I really have to tell you, folks, this is one hardworking legislator. Thanks a lot, Mike. And enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And thanks to all of you for joining us on the Commons today. Please stay tuned. We'll be back next Saturday, same time, same place. This is Shu Bartholomew signing out. Have a safe weekend on the Commons. Is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Take any wooden nickels out there, guys. See y'all next.